Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
Today, we got a debate for you. Clone Wars, the cartoon versus Rebels and Bad Batch combined to give them a fighting chance.
That's not nice. That's not accurate.
You can tell which side I'm going to be on, Clone Wars, which, if you're already a longtime listener of this show, I guess it was about nearly 60 episodes ago now, Ryan and I did a whole episode about the Clone Wars. So a lot of the points you might hear me say today might be repeats of some of those, but you never heard me talk about Rebels, or I think I've talked a bit about Bad Batch in the past. So, you know, it's going to be more of a discussion because formalized debates, we've tried them, doesn't really work out very well. So it'll be mostly I'm on the side of Clone Wars, mostly he's on the side of Bad Batch, Rebels, and we're just going to be refuting each other. You know, I like this about the Clone Wars, didn't like this as much in the Bad Batch and Rebels in comparison. I might even argue against myself for fun. We'll see. So, getting into our close-up now, let's hash it out. Clone Wars is better. Can we agree?
No.
Okay.
No. Yep. Yeah. Rebels is better than Clone Wars. For sure.
Okay, yeah, that's a bit of a hot take. I think the onus is more on my side for public opinion, so maybe you should explain a little bit about what you find so appealing in Rebels.
Well, what really stands out to me, the difference between Clone Wars and Rebels, is its cast of characters. It's been years since I've seen either of these shows, and I can tell you lots about every single one of the core crew of Rebels.
What are their names?
You really want me to do this?
The core crew? Sure.
Oh, I'm not good at names, though. There's Sabine, Ezra, Kanan, Hera, and Zeb.
You're missing one.
And Chopper.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. See, I remember them all.
And their ship is called?
The Ghost.
Correct.
And what about the little one? Is the Ghost 2? Oh, no, it's called the Phantom.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about the Phantom.
Yeah.
By the way, how deep into spoilers do you want to get on these before we go any further?
All the way.
All the way?
All the way. Oh, yeah. There's no way. These shows are so old. We can't, like,
yeah.
At this point,
Bad Batch is the newest one, but not enough of you watch the Bad Batch anyway, so shame on you.
Yeah.
All you Star Wars fans. So just, we'll probably get into Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Empire as well. Just the whole Filoni-verse. Just red flags on all of them. Spoiler alert on this whole animated universe. So, yeah. So you know the names. That's a start.
Yeah, you know the names. You know the characters. I think, like, Rebels spent its time with each character. You know, you can remember the arcs where, like, there's, you know, we get the most information about Twi'leks we've ever had in what's canon, technically.
Yeah.
Still, I'm not sure about the expanded universe. That's not my territory.
I don't know about canon expanded universe, but old expanded universe had way too much on literally everything. So
yeah, I can imagine it's in there, but we got Hera's culture and her family and everything about her background, and that came into play. I think that was later in Rebels, but it came into play eventually.
It was more when Thrawn came in, because he had pieces of her culture in a trophy room.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal.
Yeah, that was a big one.
They also explore Hera's culture in Bad Batch too.
Yes.
If I recall, there was a couple episodes when they were on Ryloth and met her parents and her as a little girl.
Yeah, they explored that as well.
Under Imperial occupation.
And we also got to see, I think the one character we didn't get to see much of their background was Ezra, but he was supposed to be a blank slate, essentially.
We got the exposition dump about he's an orphan.
Yeah.
And that's all you need
that's
to know.
That's all you really needed to know. But we also got our dips into the Mandalorian culture with Sabine. You got to see a lot of Kanan his background with the Force and his original training. We got to find out about all of that. But we also got to watch each one of these characters evolve as well.
Yeah.
Right? Like one of the best parts for me, I think, was seeing Kanan's view on the Force evolve. He's not a master, right? He's not, by Jedi standards, he was not a master.
He's an apprentice.
Yeah. But he was now training Ezra. And in a way, like we had that segment where he officially, in a way, became a master. He went to the Jedi Temple. They saw through that. But that was after the experiences that really changed his view of the Force. And he became more of a master as time went on and was officially, by the funny spirits of the Force, was given the title of a master. But you got to watch these characters change and grow. And Ezra, same thing, right? We got to see, but a totally different direction. We got to see a similar story to... It is a very similar relationship to Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
But different at the same time.
Well, because they're more on equal footing. I mean, Anakin and Obi-Wan were too in the Clone Wars, but then they always had this master-Padawan dynamic. Kanan and Ezra were more... I don't know, it was more of a casual thing.
Yeah, it wasn't so direct with it, yeah. But you got to see, as Kanan evolved one way, you watched Ezra evolve a totally different direction. And I think that's what makes some of the emotional moments hit harder, is you've seen these characters, you've followed them through a long period of time from the very beginning to the end. You've followed them throughout this. You've seen the whole journey. You've seen these characters evolve and change. And I find that benefit it had over the Clone Wars. The parts about the Clone Wars that I really liked was seeing Ahsoka change. But many of the other characters didn't really get a chance to have a arc across the entire series.
I'd argue Anakin did.
Anakin sure. did.
Anakin went from starting out as this brash young Jedi Knight who is incredibly reluctant to even have a Padawan learner in the first place, to basically being a full-on older brother figure, seeing Ahsoka through her childhood and into becoming a competent young woman in her own right. And you get to see Anakin's attachments that he so famously led him down to the dark side when he started to lose these attachments. His attachment to Ahsoka and Padme and Obi-Wan and the Jedi Order itself and to Palpatine, seeing all these relationships in his life and all these pulling forces that are dragging his emotions in different directions and who's ultimately going to be the biggest influence, and seeing how the war slowly disillusions him and the Jedi Order as well over time. He sees the flaws of the Order, like that one installment when they flat out told him Obi-Wan was dead to emotionally manipulate him into believing selling the story for people to believe them. Or when they also, with Ahsoka, when they accused his Padawan of being a terrorist and he believed her, but the council totally just disregarded their own, which by the time you get to episode 3, seeing the betrayals of the Jedi Council, you totally understand why by the time they put him on the council but didn't make him a master, you're like, well, you guys are just arrogant jerks, and people like Palpatine have always treated me well the entire time. Just he's never been able to publicly acknowledge his love for Padme, and just it really fleshes out the things the prequels only hinted at where it shows you all these relationships and why they mean so much to him, and also why they got ripped out of his life unfairly, or he was being never allowed to fully be himself, or the people who he was meant to trust stabbed them in the back and said, oh, it's just warfare. You know, you had to, you're just a soldier and you had to do your part. So you can, it makes his turn a lot more believable.
Well, also, I mean, I will give that point to Clone Wars, is that it recontextualized Revenge of the Sith for me, which after I had watched Clone Wars, when I watched Revenge of the Sith again, it became my favorite Star Wars movie. Yeah. Having that background context and that subtext behind everything Anakin does, and it doesn't clash.
Whatsoever.
It works perfectly. Seamlessly. Having that context makes the movie so much better.
And I think that's the big thing I find with the Clone Wars compared to Rebels or Bad Batch, where both of those shows to me are for Star Wars fans to say, this is more adventures in the Star Wars world. They're fun. They're good. But they don't feel integral. Clone Wars, yes, you can watch the prequels without the Clone Wars, but unanimously, they made those movies better for existing. And it also had the issue right from its inception of it has to chronicle the events of this war and feel seamless by the end. The very beginning, what the heck do you mean Anakin's got a Padawan? She's not in Revenge of the Sith, so she's got to die, right? Probably. We don't know. What's this character that you're just shoehorning in out of nowhere? She's going to suck. And then she becomes one of the all-time fan favorite characters. Yeah. And the fact that this show is starring characters from the movies like Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme puts them in situations that we could only dream to see. This is the show that pays off A New Hope, about the first time Obi-Wan tells of the Clone Wars. This is what people could only have dreamed the Clone Wars turned out to be. So it's paying off the original Star Wars from 40 years ago, 50 years ago nearly now, with characters from the prequel movies that are, you know, Anakin's the Chosen One. It's him becoming Darth Vader. It's starring the main protagonist of the entire franchise and is an integral part of his character arc for the duration of the original six Star Wars saga. It sets up everything the movies that only told you between the lines. So just as a big Star Wars fan, as a casual Star Wars fan, Clone Wars is as important to the saga as the original six movies. Rebels and Bad Batch are just sort of, if you're a Star Wars fan and you want a little extra in this world, that's a good time.
Well, I think it comes down to why we watch movies. We watch movies for entertainment. Mm-hmm. And yes, Clone Wars can enhance your entertainment, but it's got to say something for when you've got shows like Rebels and Bad Batch that hold their own with characters we've never seen before. And they even use, when they use like cameo characters, they use them very well. Like, you know, Vader is in like two episodes of Rebels.
Yep.
And they're some of the best episodes of Rebels as well. When you like, I recently, like not recently, but before the Ahsoka show came out, I watched Disney Plus had their Ahsoka collection. And I watched all of the Ahsoka Clone Wars episodes. And then it got, and I didn't even remember that the Ahsoka versus Vader fight happened in Rebels.
Yep.
I was like, what? That was in Rebels? I thought for sure that was in Clone Wars. It's in Rebels.
Well, see, that's part of my problem with Rebels, is that the Clone Wars was just creating new things. All these characters like Ahsoka, Savage Opress, Cad Bane. Ventress wasn't created for the show, but she was also in other things. Just as some examples, these characters were introduced in the Clone Wars and we came to know and love them through the Clone Wars. But then in Rex, obviously, how could I forget about Rex? But then in Rebels, I feel like a lot of Rebels relies on cameos from these characters of the Clone Wars. The fact that even you were just saying, I don't care about that Ahsoka versus Vader fight because it's in Rebels. I would just, as a Clone Wars fan, I could cherry pick those episodes. I'm happy to see Ahsoka back because I cared about Ahsoka from that other show. I'm happy to see Vader back because he's the main character in the movies. I'm happy to see Hondo Ohnaka return in random cameos, or Rebels also relies on some cameos from the original trilogy. I think Leia showed up at one point, Lando showed up at one point. Not to say that it doesn't, its characters don't stand on their own two feet. They do have plenty to speak of for sure, but I never felt like Clone Wars was quite as bogged down by its connection to the supporting cast of the saga. It was like, okay, well, they're there because of course they'd be there. And Rebels does that to an extent too, but it's played more as a, hey, this person I remember. And then maybe they're kind of important for whatever episode of the week it is.
Yeah, there's cameos, but they're not as, most of the cameos are there once or twice. Yeah. Whereas something like Clone Wars, your main characters, you're borrowing from main Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right. So there's got to be something there that Rebels could make its original character stand on their own to be not that interconnected with the rest of Star Wars. You've said that it's not interconnected, and that's a benefit to Clone Wars. I think that it not being as interconnected says something that it's still well loved and well, like, you know, when we see Zeb show up in the background for like 2 seconds in Mandalorian, everybody's like, oh my God, you know, they're celebrating. Like, these characters are still so beloved to the point where they actually went ahead and made essentially a sequel to the animated show, like a live action sequel to it, basically, because it plays right off the end of Rebels, the Ahsoka show.
That's true. It's basically a total sequel. I think one problem I have with the cameos, and once again, it's less of a problem in the Clone Wars, I feel like, because they were introducing an entire new world.
Mm.
But I think that stems from the fact that, not to throw Dave Filoni under the bus, but the Clone Wars is the last big Star Wars project George Lucas was a very big figurehead on. The Clone Wars is his brainchild. A lot of the ideas were his. Dave Filoni was just the guy who could tie it all together. And in Rebels and Bad Batch, that is more an Ahsoka show as well. That is more from the mind of Dave Filoni, which he was George Lucas's protege. I'm sure a lot of the decisions that he makes, George would approve of. But that is firmly within the realm of Disney canon. And it is, for better or for worse, he has certain tendencies like those cameos. George Lucas never really cared for, I've heard people call them member berries, but you know, in the Clone Wars, it was just, okay, we're bringing characters like Count Dooku back because, well, of course he should be there. Like these are characters from the movies and of course they're going to be there, but like he never was so gratuitous as to put a young Han Solo in there. Like Rebels put in a young Lando and Leia. Like, yes, it's more of the era. George could have done that. He could have done characters like Han Solo, but he refrained. He held himself back because George was all about new. That was one of his big philosophies of entertainment, was everything had to be new. He was always pushing new boundaries, whereas Dave Filoni tends to fall back on the tried and true and nostalgia because he likes things. He has a world that he created and characters he loves. He's got to put Ahsoka in everything because he's in love with the character that he made, and we love her too. But I don't think George would have, if George were to have made Rebels and Bad Batch, he would have tried to push more forward instead of relying on the world elements we've already seen before to help it feel grounded.
I disagree.
Okay.
Because I think it comes down to the style of the shows. When we talk about Clone Wars and Tales of the Jedi, you're seeing arcs with different characters. You're talking about a universe that's blended together. These characters logically make sense to be in places. You've got some crossovers here and there, but it's all about how the world clicks together. And when you go over to Rebels and Bad Batch, we're following one set of characters. So to make it even feel remotely connected, you have to have some inserts, because instead of having a blended universe, you've got a segment of a universe. And the only way to show that it's connected is to have these inserts that come in at times.
Yeah.
So by having a core cast of characters, no matter what, if George Lucas came in and did these core cast of character shows, I think he probably would have ended up doing the same thing. I think he would have had to do cameos as well, because it's just the nature of the way they did the shows, where Clone Wars did it differently.
Yep.
But I think that's something, especially something like Bad Batch.
Yep.
Where we follow these core characters through, and despite some episodes being weaker than others, there wasn't any that I actually disliked.
Bad Batch was very consistent from start to finish.
And to me, that makes it rewatchable. Mm-hmm. I would rewatch Bad Batch. I would.
My problem with the Bad Batch, and Rebels to an extent, Clone Wars took bigger swings. I'll concede that when Clone Wars missed, it missed wide. Some of the worst Star Wars I've ever seen is in the Clone Wars. But also, some of the best. A lot of the best. And I think it hit more than it missed by a wide margin. Bad Batch always felt, to a certain extent, like it was playing it safe. Its pilot episode was amazing. Its finale was great. And there were moments of really good stuff in the middle there. Same thing with Rebels, which I feel like the overall arcs were really well handled, but the episode-by-episode basis felt pretty safe for the most part. Clone Wars took bigger swings, and it missed more than Rebels and Bad Batch, but when it hit, it's also a lot more memorable. The best of the Clone Wars, I'll take any day over the other ones, even though, and that's why I do think the Clone Wars, I'd argue, is more rewatchable, because maybe not from start to finish. You can't watch it from like episode 1 through episode 7. There's arcs you're going to want to skip for a fact.
Well, but that's the thing is, like, that's why Disney Plus had their, like, we're going to cut out just the Ahsoka parts because,
yeah,
you know, but that's my thing is that really a good sign of a good show when you got to kind of chop it up to be like, yes, this is worth watching. If you're introducing this to somebody new, not new to Star Wars, but if you wanted to introduce this to somebody, it would be very hard to get them into Clone Wars. To be like, okay, don't watch these because these are bad, but watch these because these are good, but don't watch this because this is bad. Because you got to cut a lot, especially in the first like 3 seasons.
And not least because the timeline is all over the place.
Yeah.
Some stuff that happens way late in the show technically happens earlier.
Yeah, there were some episodes that went back.
Yeah. So the timeline's all over the place on Clone Wars 2, which is also weird. But Clone Wars is sort of more meant to be taken arc by arc than, like, it is meant to be taken as a collective, but it was... See, that's the thing, right? Is you can watch... With Clone Wars, you can have recommendations. You can say, watch this arc, watch that arc, watch this arc, watch that arc. But with Rebels, their overarching season... Or Bad Batch 2. The overarching seasons... I think Rebels was more of a problem with this. Bad Batch was more episodic. You can just say, okay, these are the good episodes of Bad Batch, and there's kind of an overarching thing going on, but it was more like mercenary work. So, fine. You can watch individual episodes of Bad Batch, but Rebels was more like an overarching serialized show. So it was very hard. Like, if you didn't care for a whole season of Rebels, you need to watch a lot more of it, whereas Clone Wars is like, hey, this arc is amazing. You've only got to watch 4 episodes and get the whole story.
I'd say that's a good argument for the style, but when it came to Rebels, they never had a long stint that was bad. Other than maybe the first season, but even before the end of the first season, they had their shit figured out. They knew what they were doing. They cleaned it up. the direction that they were, the audience they were aiming for was not correct, obviously, for first half of the first season. Then they course corrected, which they did the same thing for Clone Wars as well. They course corrected, but it took a while to get it figured out.
I'd argue it's a different kind of issues to me. Like, same problem, but Clone Wars started in 2008, and it was targeted towards basically our generation. We were 10 years old when the Clone Wars first came out. And right out the gate, it was tackling some heady subject matter. By the time season 7 came out, I don't remember when that was, a couple years ago. But the point is, the show started when we were 10 years old, and it ended when we were in our mid-20s, when the final finale came out. Rebels and Bad Batch both were... Rebels was trying to cater to a younger audience before it realized that most of the people watching it were fans of the Clone Wars already in their teens when it started. But I never felt like Rebels aged up the same way. When it should have realized a lot sooner that its audience was older and more like, if it worked for Clone Wars, like a level of darkness worked for Clone Wars season 6 and 7, Rebels should have been there by season 2 when it realized who was actually watching it. Bad Batch kind of tried to do that, but I still feel like it was targeting itself towards a younger audience, despite its core audience being in their mid-20s. And I'm just like, what? Clone Wars had a lot of very dark subject matter. Not that Rebels and Bad Batch didn't, but they sanitized themselves more than I would have wanted, specifically in the Bad Batch.
I can definitely agree for the Bad Batch. I do think Rebels approached a lot of deeper subject. It's not necessarily dark. It is dark at times.
At times.
And I think this might come down to the Disneyfication of everything, but...
I just mean Rebels and Bad Batch never had a Darkness on Umbara kind of arc, you know?
No, not to that extent, but I feel like they dealt with a lot of deeper meanings to things. They dealt with a lot of big concepts, like especially when you talk about like Kanan's dealings with the Force. The Force as an idea has never been presented as good as it was done in Rebels. It was the Force itself, the exploration of just the philosophy of the Force was explored so well that like it still, I think it defines how we see the Force going forwards in Star Wars now.
That's one of my big things that I enjoyed about Rebels was Kanan, because he was just an apprentice, so he never had the full-on Jedi indoctrination like other ones had. He had a different relationship to the Force than most people, in that he was trying to run away from it for a very, very long time before embracing, no, okay, this is who I am. The Force has chosen me, and I'm on a path of destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Got to stop running away from that at some point. But he...
Well, even coming to... we said full spoilers, so...
Yeah.
Coming to where he inevitably dies, we deal with, you know, his own recognition that this was his place in the Force. This was where he was meant to be. And if you think of him early, even... because he's kind of hiding from the Force at the beginning. But once he's gotten back into it, take that character from season 2 and put him in the same position. I don't think it would have ended the same.
Maybe not.
I don't think so. And we got to see his understanding of the Force, like his understanding of the Force and his change in ideals and the change to his character is what forced his ending. And then even played further into that when we get to the World Between Worlds, where, you know, you deal with more concepts of, yes, the Force destined him to be there. You can't take him out of here.
I think the thing with Kanan is he pulled the most extreme version possible of that scene when Luke Skywalker wears the blaster shield and Obi-Wan's telling him, see with the Force, don't see with your eyes. And at a certain point when Kanan gets blind, that's the only way he can see the world is through the Force. So he has to by virtue of his condition, be more connected by it, or else he's more cut off than he'd want to be.
Yeah, you're right, because that he ended up with a lack of confidence and retracted on the work he had done at that point too, right? After he's been blinded, and it actually brought him back to his earlier state. But it's like he
trusted in the Force.
It's almost like,
and it allowed him to see what other people could not. Even though he was blind, he could see more.
Yeah. And that experience, if you think about it, if he's blocked himself off from the Force at the very beginning of Rebels, and then he unlocks himself back, his blindness and his lack of confidence, his loss, basically brought him back to where he started.
Yeah.
But then we got to see his arc, his reconnection to the Force again. But this character with his experiences, now we get to see his reconnection to the Force. What are his experiences? How have they changed him? And we get to see his reconnection done differently. How he approaches it differently now. And
for sure,
I really love those parts of Rebels. It's yeah.
I think going back a minute, I was just thinking of a couple of examples about the sanitization of Bad Batch and Rebels. Specifically, the parts that always bug me was we're in an Imperial era. We're in full-on war at this point. And most of the time on Bad Batch and in Rebels, they're using stun guns. A large chunk of
this.
Bad Batch made sense at the beginning because these are still clone troopers, mostly in the army, and we don't want to hurt our brothers, even though we disagree with them now. That's fine. But then later on, when the Imperials had basically switched out all the clone troopers anyway, and they're still operating on stun settings, and the Rebels as well, I'm like, okay, so you're fighting the Empire, and you guys are at full-on war. You're forming your own rebel cell here, but you're always trying to do things super non-lethally, which, you know, I'm into superhero stories. That's a trope, and I generally agree with it. I like when heroes can spare as many lives as possible, but it just feels a bit different in Star Wars that you're in war, and stunning setting tends to work in Star Wars when you're on espionage missions. You're trying to be sneakier because it's not as loud, but it was like every single time we're trying to spare all our worst enemies in a way that just, it felt weird to me. Whereas on Clone Wars, there were like a lot more, it was a lot more gruesome. I can think of many times where like people just got straight up impaled, and even though most of the enemies they fought were disposable battle droids and they can just go all out, whatever, there were still a lot of human casualties.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes caused by the heroes. Like, I remember one funny time there was, they were going after somebody, and Obi-Wan and Duchess Satine had him cornered, and then Anakin just stabs him through the chest from behind, and they're shocked, like, he just took this guy out, and Anakin's like, what? He was getting away, I got him.
Yeah.
Or like that one time when Anakin, one of the Trade Federation or something, they had some information that he was trying to get, and then he ended up torturing the guy like to get the information out. Or I think there was one time the Jedi Council, this may have even been the same one, the Jedi Council reached into his mind and basically like nearly melted the guy's brain with the Force to extract the information. There was a lot more brutality that way.
See, they leaned more into the brutality, but I found with Clone Wars, you never really had an emotional connection to what was going on. And I think by the time we're getting into season 7, this is post Rebels has been made. Bad Batch is probably more than half done. It's not out yet, but they're working on it by the time. But I feel like they learned from doing Rebels.
For sure.
They learned how to, because now when you go to the Ahsoka arc where That is season 7. That's not.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Trace and Rafa thing, and or are you talking?
No, not that. That sucks. That's terrible.
Are you talking the last arc?
The last arc where
she rejoins the 501st.
She rejoins, and they found a way to make the 501st matter. Before, you could kill any of the clones, and it doesn't matter.
Except Rex.
They try.
Fives and Echo.
Maybe. Yeah. There's a few in there, but even still, you didn't have that much of a connection to, like, if Fives and Echo died, like, Echo did technically die.
Counterpoint to that, though, I think we cared about the clones right away. The one that sort of put Clone Wars on the map was Episode 5, Rookies. And, like, people still remember when Heavy died. Or you go to the other episodes of the Domino Squad arc, 99 was only in a couple of episodes. People remember 99, the Hunchback Janitor, or when Echo got blown up the first time on that one mission where they were trying to free Tarkin, or the final arc in season 6 with Fives when he knows Order 66 is going down, and then everyone gaslights him into thinking he's crazy, and then he ends up getting assassinated for trying to kill the Chancellor, and he dies without revealing his secret. Like, it's a tragedy. Like, basically all the Domino Squad stuff did make us care.
Like, I'm not saying it didn't care, but I don't think the emotional connection was there.
Not as strong.
And I think they figured that out when they worked through Rebels. And then when we came back to season 7, they used those techniques to make you care, specifically making these clones more individual and making them matter a bit more to Ahsoka's story. To, you know, by having them mark the helmets, yep, they made a unique connection between Ahsoka and these troopers. So when everything goes downhill, there is a bit more of a, you can feel that relationship just tear apart.
Order 66 goes down and the people wearing her colors are trying to kill her now.
Yeah.
Just blink of an eye. When I think of other emotional moments, I think of even the side characters. Like, how many arcs was Duchess Satine in? And then we see her brutally murdered by Darth Maul. And that was absolutely shocking. Obi-Wan's there, one of his greatest enemies. He can't stop it as he runs her through with the Darksaber. And I don't know, maybe you care for Satine, maybe you're just empathizing with Obi-Wan, but I cared about stuff like that.
Yeah, I just think they didn't find the right strategy to make you really emotionally connected. Like many, like not even just Star Wars shows, a lot of other shows have a way of doing it too. But I think that's what they were missing in Clone Wars, is they didn't find a way to make you really emotionally connect with a lot of the characters. I'm not saying, like, it's not like nothing, but I think it took them a while to figure out exactly how to do that, and they nailed that down. They made you care about Kanan's death. They made you care when Ahsoka's squad turns against her, and
yep,
even going into Bad Batch, they made you, they, like,
Crosshair doesn't join the batch and he stays with the Empire.
You know, and we, that was the first episode.
Yep.
But we only saw them for like a little bit in season 7.
Yep.
And
couple episodes.
But they still made you feel something there because of the way these characters interact with each other. And then even getting later into Bad Batch, where one of the squad dies, and that death hits you way harder than anything pre-season 7 Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And you're not dealing with characters that you've seen for 6 seasons. You're dealing with characters you've seen for 1, maybe 2 seasons. And they find a way to make you really emotionally invested with these characters.
Yeah. It's because in Bad Batch, I mean, in Bad Batch especially, those characters were all they had. It was their own little mm-hmm. family, and it got broken up right away when Crosshair decided not to come with them. And then later, when after Tech dies, it's basically just Hunter, Wrecker, and Omega left, and you really feel the absence. of everybody because yeah,
that was such a hard season too because yeah. It was just like
the badge the is screen down is nothing.
Like empty. You got three characters. Like I don't know many things that can make you feel that absence so strongly.
Rebels, at least, even when they weren't all together, you still felt like they had the backing of the rebellion. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, maybe our rebel cell is kind of crumbling and that really sucks, but worst comes to worst, Bail Organa, Mon Mothma, whoever, like somebody can help me out down the line. But it was, you did feel the losses in those, especially Kanan's, but I don't know, the Bad Batch hit harder.
Well, I think that's something that Filoni's really figured out is that feeling of isolation. Like they did that in Tales of the Jedi mm-hmm. with not Ahsoka's arc. Ahsoka's arc was different.
The Dooku one.
But the Dooku arc, you slowly feel him separated and segregated and isolated. And that makes you really feel for him coming to the end. Now, I know that's helping to say, oh, yeah, the short arcs, you can tell a good story. But I think by doing shows like Rebels and doing shows like Bad Batch, Filoni has really mastered his craft at condensing and making you feel emotionally invested to these characters faster than ever. And I think if Filoni had a chance to do another show like Clone Wars with arcs, I bet you he could, like,
Tales that's is what sort Tales of
is, but I don't know same. What's going on with it because like they nailed it with Dooku and they almost did okay with Ahsoka, but then Tales of the Empire was pretty disappointing. I think it's the characters they're choosing though.
I don't really have that much investment in Morgan Elsbeth Tales. Barriss was interesting in the first one and then they basically just, the problem with her was they walked it back. They tried to do too much in a time skip. And then had basically walked her back. It was like she was very clearly going in a dark side direction from season 5 of Clone Wars. It was.
Yeah,
was,
I didn't like that they.
She was the terrorist.
Made her good again.
Yeah, she wound up an Inquisitor, which cool. That felt like a cool natural progression for this character.
It was going good until she was like, no, I don't want to be an Inquisitor, and it's like, no, this is what we expected you to do.
And it all was within 3 episodes. That felt rushed.
It just that turnaround. And the third episode was her completely.
Yeah, she was completely gone.
Segregated again. And it didn't feel earned.
No. But then I'm kind of looking forward to Tales of the, what's it called? Underworld. The next one they're doing.
I haven't heard about this one yet.
I think you saw the trailer for it. The one about Asajj Ventress and Cad Bane. Which, sure, why not?
I think that'll do better because like the Dooku arc did really well because we've experienced a lot with Dooku. Dooku is a very popular character and it did what Clone Wars did for characters. It enhanced Dooku's character. It added things that didn't clash with anything else that had to do with his character. And really recontextualized him as a character.
I think what I'm also excited about, though, is that Ventress, it looks like the Ventress stuff, I'm not sure when that's set. Depending on when they set it, it could be interesting. But I like the Cad Bane stuff because it looks like it's going to be a prequel to the Clone Wars, where he's on the younger side. And I think that's what I liked about the Dooku arc, because it showed us an era we haven't really seen, pre-Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see Dooku and a teenage Qui-Gon Jinn. Like, okay, this is new stuff. The Ahsoka stuff was basically just retreading stuff from Clone Wars and Rebels we'd already seen before. Same thing with, okay, Morgan Elsbeth, we see her working a bit of Thrawn with Thrawn in the Empire time, but then I think more than half her arc was set just before The Mandalorian. Like, okay, we kind of know what this is already. Mm-hmm. We've seen this era play out and Barriss. I'm like, okay, I've seen a lot of post Revenge of the Sith, pre A New Hope. I've seen a lot of this era already. I know what the Inquisitors are. I played Jedi Fallen Order, seen Rebels. I know what's going on here. It's nothing I haven't seen before, but I like the ones that show us different eras, like pre Phantom Menace or even pre Attack of the Clones. Just give us something slightly different.
But I think that's, it shows the flaws in how Clone Wars works, because the Dooku arc was great in it, right?
Yeah.
In Tales. But then the other arcs, it's hit or miss. Yeah. And that's the thing with it. You're either in or you're out. And
yep.
I think that's the limitation of doing those short arcs with different characters. Like different, you're watching different characters every couple weeks, and it can work, but I don't think it worked that great. But I think going forward, I think we have a better chance that it can be done. At least the episodes that work, I don't think, like, obviously Tales shows that Filoni hasn't figured out how to make sure that every arc works. But I think the ones that do work will work even better.
Well, that's why I respect Tales, because it goes back to what I said closer to the start, in that Clone Wars arcs took bigger swings.
Mm.
Some of them were swings and misses, some of them really, really connected. And the Dooku arc is one of those. It took a big swing, and it's one of the best pieces of animated content of the in Star Wars history. Like, those couple episodes really, really landed. And I respect them taking big swings like that.
And I think that comes from the combination of having the experience of Clone Wars, and having the experience doing Rebels, having the experience of Bad Batch, going back, doing season 7 of Clone Wars. All of that has combined into a mastery of his craft, basically.
I mean, you got to look at season 7 of Clone Wars as a good example, right? His first swing, Bad Batch arc. Great. He knocked that one out of the park and made us excited for a spinoff. Awesome. Then the Trace and Roth arc, which I understand you want to see Ahsoka, what's she like now that she's on her own. In principle, okay. Execution-wise, okay, we didn't care enough. But then you have the last one, which is basically like, okay, if you chop together, if you like did an edit where Revenge of the Sith and this one are like playing back-to-back together, it's like, okay,
it's beautiful. Well,
you just created one of the best Star Wars arcs of all time there that feels totally earned and connecting to everything and pays off the promise of the Clone Wars from start to finish, where you got to Revenge of the Sith and you're like in Revenge of the Sith now. Even I never thought they'd do that. I thought they might end, oh, you know, right when the Battle of Coruscant starts, okay, we're getting right to, oh no, we're in it. We're playing scenes
we're
from
going through. Yeah.
There's certain scenes in the last arc there where, they were talking to Anakin and Obi-Wan in the Jedi Temple or something. I'm like, oh, I know what happens exactly as soon as this phone call ends. We've seen the other side of this scene in live action.
I just remember when season 7 came out, like, it took me a while to work through the season.
Yeah.
Then I got to that arc and I watched all of them back to back.
I think I did
all
the same thing.
And I just sat there afterwards and I was like, never had feelings like that before from Clone Wars. And I just sat there. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
But I think that comes from having that experience of taking the break from Clone Wars, going to try something entirely different, and coming back with that experience.
I think one thing that really impacted me, especially at the end, was seeing Vader at the end of Clone Wars. Going back to what I was saying before about Anakin's arc in the show, even without the context of Revenge of the Sith, I think Clone Wars set up Anakin's fall enough in the show that when we see him as Vader, it's heartbreaking. We don't see Ahsoka's reaction to it yet. We get that in Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
But even just seeing him in the costume there and finding Ahsoka's lightsabers, and that's, and he buries that. That's like one of the last shreds of Anakin Skywalker. Like, even in Revenge of the Sith, it's like, oh no, Padme died, and he's very upset by that, and like, he thinks Obi-Wan stabbed him in the back, the Jedi Council's gone, the Padme's dead. But even just for that brief moment, his apprentice might be out there, and then he thinks she's dead, and you know for sure that's it. It's just, like that last little bit we didn't know we needed as that footnote.
The final nail in the coffin for him, basically.
Which Revenge of the Sith sets up well, even with the context we've got. But knowing Ahsoka's out there somewhere and seeing Vader think she's dead, that's like, oh no, no. Now I know for a fact that's your humanity's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that really hit me, seeing him in the costume there, knowing, oh, I think it was also hearing James Earl Jones's voice on there. It was like, oh man, Matt Lanter's finally done. And this hurts.
Yeah. No, that was very special that they did that transition there.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, did they do it in Kenobi or was it in Rebels where they blended?
That was in Kenobi.
I think it was Kenobi.
I think they did it in Rebels too, because
in Rebels had like the identical moment. But they did it first, obviously. But
yeah.
That shows you some of the artistic stuff that went into Rebels is so good that they're like,
when the mask
they
breaks,
they gotta repeat it. Like, holy.
James, I think it was James Earl Jones mixed with Matt Lanter in that scene. And it was, oh, okay, this is really
well
done.
And it was so well done when they did it. Even though I'd seen this exact scene before, just with a different, like, it's literally you're subbing Obi-Wan for Ahsoka. I've seen this scene exactly play out before. And it was so well done.
I still think, as far as emotions go, one of the best they ever did was the season 5 finale when Ahsoka left. And that's, once again, another big thing about Anakin's arc. It makes me emotional every time I see their final goodbye. When she quits and she's leaving the temple and Anakin tries to stop her and they have their final heartfelt goodbye and she walks off into the sunset, and you can just tell in that moment he just feels so betrayed, not by her but by the council for putting them into this position. He knows how screwed she got in that arc, and you can feel, oh okay, this is like the first huge seed for his turn.
I love that they hold on it for a minute to show everything. Like, you can just tell what's going through his head, where it's like, you know, he's thinking about her, but he's also thinking about himself, how it's like, you can just tell he has the temptation that he's like, I wish I could do that, but I can't do
that. That's also true, because he's also hiding from Padme, and he already feels like the council is holding him back, but he's staying in this life with people he is increasingly disagreeing with. And then Ahsoka has the guts to leave it all behind, and he wishes he could be her. Funny enough, the apprentice is becoming more wise than the master in that moment, and he sees it, but he's regretting it. But it's moments like that that the Clone Wars handles exceptionally, and to me, it also plays out well because it's working on a meta level too. I don't think, once again, Bad Batch and Rebels never had any expectations. They can basically do whatever they want. But right away, we're saying, we don't give a damn about this child that Anakin is saddled with in the Clone Wars, and we didn't even know she was a thing. So why should we care? And, oh, she's probably going to die before Revenge of the Sith in, like, Order 66 or whatever anyway. And then you grow to care about her. You see her grow up into this young woman. You see her get totally screwed by the Jedi Council, and you're fully on board with her decision. You're like, no, you go, girl. Get out of there. Walk away. Quit. That's awesome. And it's also the fact that they found a way to write her out that feels totally earned without killing her off, in a way that if you ask 10 Star Wars fans how they thought Ahsoka was getting written off the Clone Wars, nobody would have said she quit.
No.
And they somehow made that work. So I think Clone Wars had a very tough time having expectations on it, and they paid off everything you could possibly pay off with the characters they created, and also the characters like Anakin and Obi-Wan that we knew where they were going. They exceeded our expectations even. So that, I just have mad respect for the show, because Star Wars fans are a very picky bunch, and Clone Wars managed to satisfy the vast majority of them with its storytelling.
Well, and it managed to take an animated character, make her so popular that they brought her to live action
multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mandalorian, own spinoff.
But Rebels did the same thing with their entire cast.
Yep.
They brought so many characters to life that and even still, we there's characters in Rebels that aren't in the, was it the Ahsoka show? It's the Ahsoka show. Yeah.
I mean, Zeb wasn't in it, but he was also in The Mandalorian briefly. Like, they did it. I think most of them have been adapted in live action now.
Yes. Yes. Except for Kanan.
Yeah.
But even still, they've created characters that are so popular that we want to see them in live action. And even they're so popular. Now, Clone Wars did the same thing, but it's impressive that Rebels could do it, being so disconnected and making you love so many characters. And especially when it comes to something like Rise of Skywalker, where both of these, all of these shows, really, the Jedis they create, you can pick their voices out in the end. And you're like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah.
That's Kanan right there. Oh, wow. There's Ahsoka. Like,
for sure.
The fact that these cartoons designed for kids initially became so pop, they created characters that are so popular that those are the characters that you're seeing. The first time I watched Rise of Skywalker, those were the characters that I was like, oh my God. Right?
Yeah, right.
Like, you're like, oh yeah, you know, we already saw a Yoda cameo not that long ago. Okay, you hear him. It was cool hearing the original Obi-Wan.
James Earl Jones.
No,
James Arnold Taylor.
Nope.
Yeah.
Did he do the voice in that one? Or because they have in
the micro series? Yeah.
No. I mean in Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
Oh, Ewan McGregor probably.
Because I'm it was pretty sure it was who's it? Why can't I remember his name? The original, the like Alec A New Guinness? Hope. Yes, Alec Guinness. Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure you hear him at that point.
Oh, okay.
But I think they did multiples of characters in there because they do a lot all at once. Because I know you hear Hayden Christensen and Matt Lanter is in there as well.
I think Yoda was in there too.
Yeah, Yoda was in there, but having doubles of characters, that shows mad respect that you've got characters that are being portrayed by multiple actors, and you got to give props to them that it's like they're all doing, especially like Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is at what, three?
Three, and they're all equally beloved.
And they're all equally beloved, right?
Alec Guinness, James Arnold Taylor, and Ewan McGregor.
We got to put all of their voices in this sequence or it won't feel right. You got to give it credit to these animations that they were made for kids and they're so beloved that they could, you know, who would have thought that these shows would be so impactful towards the movies?
I think, going back to what I said before, ask 10 Star Wars fans whether they'd watch these shows or the sequels, and they'd say these shows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're but to the point where...
If you went back in time and you're like, try to tell you when Clone Wars first comes out, oh, yeah, this is gonna, you know, build so many characters. Like, these Star Wars animated shows are gonna build so many characters that are so beloved that they impact, they're so impactful to the movies. Like, you wouldn't believe that a cartoon would be that impactful to how you watch and experience the Star Wars movies, which are like the holy relics.
For sure.
For sure. Like, it's crazy.
I think Ahsoka is the biggest thing about that, though, because once again, nobody had any expectations for her. And then people love when she shows up in Rebels. They love when she shows up in The Mandalorian. They loved her enough to have her own spinoff show that covers, you know, she was a child in the Clone Wars and then a an adult woman during Rebels, and she's this wise master now in the Mandalorian era, and in her own show, we get to see her span pre-Empire era, Empire era, post-Empire era, maybe into the sequel era if we get that far. But like, we've seen her across arguably more than anybody else, except maybe Yoda. Because everybody else, Obi-Wan as well, but we never saw Obi-Wan in a post-Empire era.
Yeah, we've seen her in basically every era.
Yeah. She's one of the
except R2-D2. R2-D2 is in every...
R2-3PO and Yoda, and I guess Chewie, briefly. There's a couple. But Ahsoka's among them. Among a very, very small number of characters who made it all the way through the prequels to the end. To the sequels, even.
Yeah, all the way through, basically.
Yeah. Now I want to get into probably my big thing about the Clone Wars, which you're already kind of refuting, but I'm going to go into it anyway. To me, the big thing about Clone Wars that I prefer over Rebels and Bad Batch is that it has a mission statement, and it does. It's done that from episode one all the way through episode seven, and I feel like it's about something. If you forget the movies, if you're just watching Clone Wars from all the way through, the show is about warfare. Every single arc is about an aspect of warfare. It's about the frontline combats, the senators and the politics, the diplomats, the assassins, mercenaries, covert operators, the economics with the banking clan, weapons manufacturers and deployment, and the brutality, the child soldiers, friendly fire, enslavements, wide-reaching devastation, growing cynicism and disillusionment, power vacuums for fascism to seep through, manipulators playing both sides. Just every single arc is about some aspect of warfare. It is like a mass anthology about every facet of warfare from start to end. And in the franchise called Star Wars, I don't think any single installment of the franchise has handled the concept of warfare better than the Clone Wars. We saw it from every single side you could see a war from, and mostly done well in all regards. We've seen them from the top of the Senate to the frontline combatants to even the nuance of it, like that one time when Padme took Ahsoka behind separatist front lines, and you find, oh, they're just normal people who wanted to secede from the Republic, and it's all propaganda BS that convinces us that they're battle droids and dark side and Sith and evil, like most of them are just regular people who wanted to leave the Republic. That kind of nuance doesn't exist so much in the other shows, where the Empire is just, yeah, who's denying that the Empire is evil? The separatists aren't necessarily evil people, they're just run by the evil people. But those same people are also running the Republic, and we know that going in. So every single thing is like Ventress is the assassin, and then you have like these rogue elements like Darth Maul coming in trying to make power grabs, and he takes over Mandalore and kills Satine and takes this peaceful neutral nation and turns them into the war, brings back their warmongering history, and then there's like weapons of mass destruction. There's like the malevolence. I remember that from early on. Or in season one, they also had the like a bioweapon. They have stuff like that. We've explored the banking clan and the Jedi Order, like the religious, these religious orders who are fighting amongst each other, kind of having their own shadow war behind the war. Light side versus dark side, the Jedi versus the Sith, forget the Republic versus the Separatists. There's like a separate religious sects having their own schism. Between seven seasons of the Clone Wars, we see the galaxy at every angle. Oh yeah, and then there was another one, like the guerrilla warfare. I remember there was one where like, oh, the Republic doesn't want to get involved in this world objectively. So like Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka start training Saw Gerrera and his sister as these rebel cells to overthrow their world's government, trying to fight a proxy war on this one, or another one when Anakin gets sold into slavery again, or somebody, like, they end up fighting these slavers in the Outer Rim, or like the pirates, Hondo and Aka, all these different factions, all with their own motivations. We see an entire galaxy's worth of characters and planets, all with their own unique problems, every arc covering something unique. Or even going back to like Darkness on Umbara, we see what mutiny looks like against leaders who are just putting your guys up front as cannon fodder. Just super heady themes, really dark stuff a lot of the time. Just, and that is why Clone Wars is one of my all-time favorite shows, is just because it covers so many angles. Not all of them are knocking it out of the park, but every arc covers something different. And by the end, you get the most complete picture of warfare I've ever seen in entertainment.
I will point something out. There is one blind spot, but that's where Bad Batch picks up the slack, because it covers the devastation of, like, immediate post-war. That is the final piece that would be missing to say that it is an overall story of warfare. Are missing the post-war, like the immediate fallout of the post-war, which is the entire point of Bad Batch.
All we know from the end of Clone Wars is that after all this war, the master manipulator on both sides basically wiped out all his competition and turned, combined the warring factions into a fascist state.
Mm.
Which is a big, that's kind of going back to the overall thing of Star Wars, which we already knew was going to happen, was this politician orchestrating wide-reaching death and destruction just to gain ultimate power in a game of political chess. That was the ending. We already knew that was the ending, but Clone Wars let us see all the
lead-up.
All the lead-up with all these individual people going from just trying to live their lives up to every facet of warfare. And that's why I hold it in such high regard. Because Rebels and Bad Batch to me they're good TV shows, but they're not doing anything other good TV shows don't do. They're about a group of characters. They grow, they change, they learn, they have cool adventures, but they're not really about anything as a central idea. I come away from Clone Wars with a knowledge of how warfare works that's applicable to the real world too. Like, oh, this stuff really happens. This is just a fantasy version of real life atrocities and how wars work.
Mm-hmm.
It's got more real world applications, whereas Rebels and Bad Batch are more, okay, this is good stories about found family trying to navigate a fascist dictatorship.
See, and I think it comes down to preference, because yes, each arc has its own theme it goes into to tell an overall picture. The main character is warfare.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And I think it's personal preference though, because when you deal with multiple characters, when you deal in like Rebels, yes, each one of your arcs has themes, but when you get Rebels, each one of your characters and their arcs are their own separate themes, and the show is about how that all ties together. And so it's basically a personal preference thing about what you're expecting, where Clone Wars is more about the overall picture, I guess.
The big picture.
Yeah, it's the big picture. But it's not so far into the nuance, I guess.
It's the big picture and about all these little stories that make up the big picture. It's even the main characters we know often, like you said, a lot of times they feel like we're seeing snapshots of their lives just because we're in the arc here. And those sort of add up when you see them recur multiple times. Like, well, I know what's going on with you and it's recurring, but it really only matters. A lot of times Clone Wars is more about the supporting characters in each arc. Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka are kind of our guides through it. They do have more stuff going on, like Rex and Fives and Echo, and like the recurring characters more serve to guide us through what's actually happening. And every arc kind of has its own characters that we meet and cause problems to overcome and teach us something about warfare by the end of it.
Well, and I think that's why I think Bad Batch is a perfect marriage between Rebels and Clone Wars. It tells that overall story of the immediate post-war veterans, essentially.
Yeah.
But it still deals with that found family aspect and the close-knit characters. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds in a way.
The other reason, what I will give Bad Batch as well, which I think Rebels suffers in, going to what I was saying about seeing different, basically all the sides of this, of the galaxy, the good guys, the bad guys, everything in between. Rebels at least gives us, Bad Batch at least gives us the perspective of Crosshair from time to time within the Empire. We see what the Imperial power dynamic looks like. Occasionally, Rebels would show us what's happening with Thrawn or Kallus, but most of the time it had its focus on the good guys.
Yeah, it's very one-sided.
Which is my big problem with Rebels, is it doesn't have that perspective of Clone Wars.
They never really show you what Thrawn is actually doing. If you get scenes with just Thrawn, it's usually a tease to let you know that they're walking into a trap or something, like to tell the audience, to give the audience information that they don't have, but it's never really looking at what Thrawn is actually trying to do. His side of things is not presented. No,
exactly. And that I think is a flaw that Bad Batch remedies. It doesn't necessarily have the wide-reaching perspective of Clone Wars, but with one of the main members of the Bad Batch in the Empire, it gives more, this is what the Empire is trying to do, at least.
And it's still telling that story of the different paths of the post-war veterans, essentially.
Yeah, which is why, for the sake of this argument, I'm placing Bad Batch alongside Rebels, just because they are separate shows, but in my own headcanon, Bad Batch is Clone Wars Season 8, 9, and 10.
Pretty much.
It really, if you watch Clone Wars Season 7, it introduces the Bad Batch. And then Bad Batch Season 1 picks up right at the end of Revenge of the Sith. It basically, Palpatine forms the Empire and we drop right in. And that's where Clone Wars ended. So for all intents and purposes, that Bad Batch is the post-war that the Clone Wars series never got. They just gave it a name change because the Clone Wars are over and we're following a new group of characters. That's how I choose to see Bad Batch. But just for the sake of this debate, it's its own thing.
See, and I think that's where, when I think about Clone Wars, 5, 6 is kind of weak. But season five is the heart that went into Rebels. And then Rebels changed the game for Clone Wars to create Season 7 and Bad Batch. And I think that together is kind of like that ordering of how things released and how Dave Filoni kind of changed his process has led us to some of the best. Season 7 and Bad Batch are fantastic. They're some of the best Star Wars out there, I think.
For sure.
But that's why is, I think, if we were comparing the first 4 seasons of Clone Wars to the 4 seasons of Rebels, I think it's 4 seasons, right?
Yeah.
I think they kind of hold ground together. But when you take that marriage of the experience of Rebels on top of Clone Wars to get these like absolute amazing, some of the best Star Wars we've seen, 7 to up. And then you go into stuff like the Ahsoka show. There is a direct path between them that made some of the best Star Wars that, like, my favorites.
It's a very weird kind of discussion to have because it's not like Clone Wars had a 7-season run and it ended, and then Rebels went on for 4 seasons and it ended, and Bad Batch came on. they've been bouncing back and forth between each other basically ever since Disney bought them.
Yeah.
So it was six seasons of Clone Wars and then most of Rebels, and then Clone Wars season 7 came out, and then the Bad Batch did three seasons, and then Tales of the Jedi and stuff in between that. But it hasn't been a hard cutoff. They've been influencing each other for a while. So,
and that's why that path really builds on each other. Like, without Rebels, we don't get some of the best of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Not that their story is integral, but the learning process of creating said story.
It's also about the technologies behind it as well. Because when Clone Wars first started out, that kind of 3D animation technology was still in its infancy, especially for TV. I mean, you had stuff like, wow, something like Pixar can put out a really high budget quality 3D animation.
Yeah, you didn't see this on TV. There was no budget for that.
No, back in 2008, this was like, what do you mean you can put out a 24 episode season of TV with this animation style? And it looks good. And then every season, it just got better and better. I'm not going to be so arrogant as to say, oh yeah, like Clone Wars animation holds a candle to the Bad Batch last season. you know, of course
not. The Bad Batch is like near photorealistic.
It's gorgeous.
With its everything. And even, like, not the characters, but the way they've done the characters is much better.
And you can see the progression over time. Like, I think Rebels was always going for more of a...
It was a different look.
It was going for more of a cartoony, heightened vibe, which I think a lot of people didn't care for that, which is why they went back to the Clone Wars style for the Bad Batch and Tales.
Yeah, I'm not gonna argue that Rebels is a beautiful looking show. It was can stylistic. It was a style. Was it a great style? I think I prefer the look of the Clone Wars, but
I think that also lends to me feeling like Rebels, even in its later seasons, was still kind of kiddie, because that's the style they went for. Mm-hmm. Looked more appealing to kids. Clone Wars always, I don't know, just felt more gritty. Had more color dynamic, more, I don't know, like that photorealism, and I can like see the dirt on the ground, and Rebels always felt a bit more just sanitized. I've said that word a few times, but it's
what it is, though.
Yeah, it is what it is, which I think is fine for the first couple seasons. It suited the tone, but in the last couple seasons, the visual style kind of clashed with the stories they were trying to tell. If you redid those last couple seasons of Rebels in a Clone Wars animation style, I'd take a show I'd already like and probably make it even better.
Yeah, probably.
Those first couple seasons in a Clone Wars animated style would have been okay too, but somehow those first few seasons, it fit what they did at the time. Mm-hmm. But then Rebels took a turn and its style never really changed with it.
They updated it a bit. And they tried to change, what they did is they tried to change the characters more.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like, change the design of the characters to show that change, but
Ezra got a buzz cut.
Yeah. They couldn't really change the visual style at that point. I don't think you could do a major visual style shift. I know they did, like, when you compare shots of season one Rebels to the final season, it's drastically better. It definitely is. There's a lot more put into it. They've put a lot more detail in, like they did Clone Wars. But fundamentally, you can't just change the animation style that drastically at a certain point. Like,
yeah.
Once the show is out, you can't change that styling.
Yeah. I still give Clone Wars credit for pushing the boundaries for this technology in the first place.
Mm.
And I give... On your side, I give props to Bad Batch for mastering it, getting better every single time. Season 3 of Bad Batch is one of the most beautiful cartoons I've ever seen. Just like, the characters look stylized, but the backgrounds are photorealistic by Bad Batch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this is CGI you could be seeing in the mainline live action movies. And
I still can't believe some of the shots of like the ships landing
on the space shots.
The planet.
Yeah.
Holy shit. especially that whatever the base where they were holding what's his name for a really long time. And they were trying to find it. When the Bad Batch finally come, like, land in there, oh my god, that shot was so gorgeous. I looked at that and I was like, that, it's like, it's practically photoreal, the whole thing. This whole shot, the whole building, all the nature, the ship, the sky, everything.
And you could tell, and that one was the finale, when they actually got a little bit more budget, you could tell.
Yes, it definitely upped. On the big, you knew what the bigger episodes were based on how it looked.
Same thing with the finale of the Clone Wars as well. It's like, okay, they've had this technology good for a very long time, and they do a great job in all these shows of producing so much content at such a consistent rate. But when they put the budget into it for the finale of the Clone Wars and for the finale of the Bad Batch, it's like, okay, here's the money. Especially, I remember in Clone Wars Season 7, the finale had that mocap fight between Maul and Ahsoka that, wow, this is the most fluid live action, fluid lightsaber fight we've ever seen in these cartoons, because they had the budget to one-up themselves from usual. The way they've increased this technology has almost undoubtedly made the live action projects they've done better. I'm sure stuff they figured out made the CGI more easy to create for The Mandalorian or any of the Disney Plus shows.
We slap some of the Bad Batch stuff on the volume and
you're good to go.
And you're already halfway there.
And the fact that they could make it so quick for a TV show as well, like, yeah, they figured out a way to make photorealistic CGI with a quicker turnaround. I don't know exactly what they're doing, but it all started back with the Clone Wars in 2008, and they're just making it better all the time. So, yeah, I mean, all these shows are good. We're not.
Realistically, the roadmap between them is what brought us to the point that we are at. Bad Batch and Tales of Jedi is pretty much the culmination of everything that came before it. The experience to build these great shows that we have at the end.
This whole animated universe is really, it all connects with each other. I find it harder to enjoy Rebels without having seen Clone Wars first, because they have so many interconnecting characters. Same thing with Bad Batch. I'm like, well, if you don't know the setup, I don't really care as much. And that is one reason I prefer Clone Wars, because you really just need to see the prequels, but even then it kind of works as its own anthology about war. But just still as a universe, if you're watching all 14 seasons that we've been discussing today, it all tells a shared story very well. That all you really need to know is these 14 seasons and the 6 movies, and you don't even really need the movies. It tells enough of its own story with context. We see the fall of the Republic, the post-war period, the rebel cells starting to get together, and Rebels ends where A New Hope starts. But yeah, so all this is good stuff. And I knew if anybody could make a good argument for Rebels and Bad Batch, it's Justin, because nobody else I know feels as strongly about these shows as he does.
I tried.
Once again, I said it right at the start, but like, public opinion's probably on my side, but I think you did a great job of pitching the merits of Rebels and Bad Batch for people who are less appreciative and maybe wrote them off way too soon.
Yeah.
Because they are very good shows in their own right.
Well, that's like I convinced Ryan to try Rebels, and I don't know what he thought of it, because we never got back to him on it. But
last I heard, he never liked Rebels, and that's why we never talked about it.
Yeah, and then he was going to give it another shot, but I don't know.
I mean, that's why we talked about Clone Wars 60 episodes ago, and we never talked about Rebels, because, mm-hmm, like, I've had this debate written in the list for a very long time, and I don't think this is one Ryan could have... I would have had to take Rebels' side, because Ryan just never cared for it. But yeah, this is good. We brought up some points. I hope you think about them and just enjoy all these shows. They're all good. I'm looking forward to whatever they do next.
Yep. I hope they keep going with the Ahsoka show because it's fantastic.
I hope so.
It's great. It's probably the only one that's got more room to grow right now. So
there's a good potential for a season two there.
I think it'll go even further.
Yeah. I mean, they're set up in a good way. So where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook at ThoughtPlane Media. And check out thoughtplane.ca for everything else we do. You can even donate a buck or two there if you like our work and you're feeling generous. Buy us a candy bar. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe. Until next time.
Take care.